We are on shloka number 4, where Lakshmidhar Kavi is comparing the scriptural understanding of Brahman with our nature and logically proving that what scriptures are saying is correct, and therefore I should not doubt that I am Brahman. So the whole purpose of this entire text is to remove this doubt that is there within us, that what scriptures are telling me I am Brahman cannot be true. And I can only remove that when I have logically convinced myself, when I have that understanding why I am this Brahman. So in scripture, Brahman is said to be Nityam, Vibhum, Sarvagatam. All definitions of eternality. This is who Brahman is. But Atma, I am what? I find myself to be always changing. So then how is this reconcilable? How can Brahman say, well, how can scripture say Brahman is this and I am this Brahman when I don't feel I am eternal? So then Swayam Prakashitiji says, let's question this eternality. How can you prove something is eternal? Only if you can prove there is no destruction, then it is eternal. If there is ever a possibility of a destruction, then it cannot be eternal. So instead of showing something as eternal, let's look at the world and see where destructions are possible. And if there is no proof of such destruction in Atma or Brahman, then there should not be any argument anymore that I am not eternal. I am also eternal. This is that basis. This is the groundwork for this shloka number 4. There are 3 ways that the destruction is possible. And those 3 ways are taken up in the shloka to prove that these 3 ways of destructions cannot be seen in Atma. The first way of destruction is self-destruction. On its own, Atma dies. Nothing is needed. Its nature is like that, that it dies. This belief is coming from Buddha Dharma. The Buddhists have this concept. Now, obviously, I have not gone to study Buddhism, so I cannot fully say that that's what Buddhism is all about. But from our perspective, when Swayam Prakashitiji was explaining, he said that this is the philosophy that comes from Bauddha Paksha. That's what he said. So we'll take that. Destruction number 2 is when it is coming in contact with something, some yoga. So when it comes in contact with something else, there is a destruction. An example given is a pot coming in contact with a stick. So the pot is broken because of the stick coming in contact. Destruction of pot. Second type of destruction. And third type of destruction is patanashaha, patagata rupadi ashraya nasha. If a cloth is destroyed, then the form that is there in the cloth, that is also destroyed. So that which was taking support of the cloth, that is also destroyed. So in this way, three destructions are possible, and in all three, there is no destructions for Atma. This is what is going to be proven. We have seen the first argument, but we need to further see some ideas within it. So what we saw was, Lakshmidhar Kavi says, na swataha nasha. Atma cannot get destroyed on its own. That is the statement. Atma cannot be destroyed on its own. The reason for that is pratyabhijna. Why can't the Atma be destroyed by itself? Is because there is something called pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna is a proof of continuity. What do we mean by that? So when we say pratyabhijna, it is simply my current perception, whatever I am perceiving, I match it with my previous remembrance, previous idea that I had remembered about the same experience. And then I say, this is that. So in order for me to relate that this, what I am seeing, is that, there has to be a continuity between this and that. Making sense? Simple enough thought on that. This, so example given is, this son who is experiencing the parent. I am the one who has experienced the parent. When I grow old, and then I experience grandchildren. So I, the one who has experienced my parent, alone am the one who is experiencing grandchildren, so that I remain the same. So my experience here is this person who is a grandparent alone was the same boy who experienced the parents. Meaning, when I was a boy, I made all these mischiefs and I harassed my parents. And at that time, my grandparents used to come and save me, help me out. Now I find myself in the same situation as a grandparent, seeing my grandchild doing all those mischief, going and hiding under the table. And food is given, not taking food in, pulling on hair. So different things children do. But the point is, I was that same, I am now the same. I'm no longer the child, but the child is alone the grandparent. That's the idea. So this proves the continuity of the Atma through time. And our experience should be enough. There should be no other proof required. Our experience enough should tell us that yes, this I was. And the continuity through the avastha, the three states. That is also sin. I who was in the Jagrat Avastha, or I who was in the Swapna Avastha, who was in the dream state, alone have woken up in the Jagrat Avastha. So the world I was experiencing in the dream is a different, and the world I experience now in the waking world is also different. But the experiencer in both is still continuing. Therefore, I'm the experiencer, not the experienced one. So that makes me go beyond the three avasthas. Now, having explained that, he says, Swayam Prakashayati ji now creates a very interesting argument. Pratyabhijna is not there. He says, let's assume, what if we were to assume that there is a new self created at every moment? Why can't we assume that? Why can't we say that the self that was there in the childhood, that self in the grandparent stage has now changed with the grandparent? So the self at that time and self now have also changed, have also modified. Why can't we say that? Because when we say consciousness, consciousness means the awareness. Awareness was there at that time. Awareness is there now. But the only thing is there is new awareness now. There is old awareness that time. Why can't we say that that awareness and this awareness are two different awareness? If we assume in this way, then there is a problem. And the problem is, how can I say that who experienced alone is this? Because at each moment, there is a new self that is created. Then the new self that was created should not have any experience of the past, or any experience of the other self. It should be mutually exclusive. So we cannot say that one self was born, stayed till the childhood. As the childhood passed, that self went away and new self came as the adulthood. That self went, new self came as a old age. That doesn't work, because then I should have no recollection of the past. So same idea, but thinking in a different way, Lakshmi Narkavi is, Swayam Prakashayati ji is presenting this idea, that I would not be able to then say, I am that. Say, for example, you went to work. You went to work and you did all the things at work. Then you come home and you are given new sets of tasks to do at home. Then you cannot make an argument saying, I just worked for 8 hours. You want me to work again? Because by this logic, I am the new self. The self who was at work is a different self than the one who is at home. But we make the argument because we feel the continuity, that I have stressed myself. I have done so much So I, who was there alone and here, this proves that there's a continuity, and that continuity proves the eternality of the Atma. And therefore, you cannot say Atma just dies on its own. You cannot say that Atma will die on its own. That is what is proven by this argument. So first point is Atma cannot die on its own because of Pratyabhijna. Okay, now the next point. Second argument. What about destruction of Atma by coming in contact with something else? Samyoga. So that is also not possible because self does not have parts. Amsha, so the shloka part is niramshatvat na cha anyataha. Anyataha means destruction by something else. That is what is understood by anyataha. Destruction by something else, na, not possible. Niramshatvat, because the self is without limbs, without parts. There is no breaks. So avayava is not there. That is the idea. Okay. So here, Swayam Prakashiti ji then raises a question. He says, if we were to say that Atma has a part, just for the sake of argument, you were to say that Atma has a part, then what would you say the part is made of? Would you say the part is made of everything that is sentient or everything that is insentient? That is what he is making an argument. Now, why is that argument coming? First, we said that Atma doesn't have a destruction by coming in contact with something else is because Atma is without any parts. So without any parts, he says, is because Atma is Chidrupa. Atma is consciousness. And just by saying Atma is consciousness, it proves that Atma doesn't have any Amsha. Atma doesn't have any parts. Amsha means parts. So Atma is consciousness, and because it is consciousness, it doesn't have any parts, and therefore it cannot have a destruction by something else. So when I say Atma is consciousness, then he asks this question, okay, if we were to say that this consciousness had parts, you would have to only have two parts or two ways possible. One is all parts are sentient parts. Because consciousness, we say, is sentience. The inherent ability to know, the inherent ability to function on its own. That is what we call as sentience. Okay? So, sentient parts or insentient parts. in two ways if we were to posit this idea. He's just creating a scenario for us to understand that in both situations, it is not possible. And there is only two ways you can have. Because if you want to divide consciousness, you can divide consciousness and say all the parts of the consciousness are all consciousness. Or you can say all the parts are non-consciousness, meaning inert, jada. That is the only way you can say the parts are. So let us agree, for the sake of argument, let us agree that consciousness has parts. Consciousness is divided. Would you say that the parts of the consciousness are also conscious? Or would you say the parts of the consciousness are inert? And he says, if you take the first idea that parts of the consciousness are also conscious, they also have consciousness. So there's consciousness one, consciousness two, consciousness three, like that there is all consciousness, okay? If there are parts that are consciousness, then it creates a problem. The problem is, he says, the body will become, he uses, shariram unmathyeta. The body becomes confused. The body is thrown apart. How so? I'll give one example. If somebody calls out to me and says, hey, Dhiren, can you come here? Consciousness one tells me I should go. Consciousness two tells me I should not go. Now I add another variation. There are two people calling me. Well, one consciousness says, I go in one direction. And the second consciousness tells me, no, you go in this direction. Which direction will the body go? Because both consciousness want to go to their different direction. Now, you may say, you know, what kind of logic is this? What kind of understanding is this? This idea, this logic doesn't make sense. Obviously, it doesn't make sense because our experience is telling us that it's not possible. When somebody calls me out, who makes the decision to go or not go? It's only one consciousness. It's only one person who is making the decision. It's not two entities making two decisions. So the idea is, when we assume that there are consciousness with parts, then we have to also assume that they are separate entity. And we don't find separatedness within us. We don't find separate entity within us. We find ourselves to be one entity. Therefore, we are in unison. Body is not confused. Otherwise, think about all the trouble that the body would need to go through. If one consciousness said one thing, another consciousness said another thing. You are eating something. All of a sudden, consciousness remembered, no, no, I should stop. Oh, no, no, better yet, I should chew, or no. I should, I don't know. I should have ice cream right now instead of having roti, sabji. Confusion will be created. That's the idea. So therefore, first example, you have consciousness as a part is not possible because we don't find our personal experience does not tell us that we are separate. And that experience should be enough. That's what Swayam Prakashatiji is saying. Here we don't require somebody else to give us any different proof than our personal experience telling us that I'm one entity. And if I'm one entity, I am consciousness, I am awareness, and this awareness cannot have parts. Okay, so first, not possible. Second, say the parts of this consciousness are all inert. If we say the parts of the consciousness are inert, then again there is a problem that from inert, how can something consciousness come about? Like, you have a thread, which is inert. Thread which is inert, which makes a cloth, can you say the cloth is already now sentient? No. Cars are made from metal and some different types of tools. They're put together and the car is now made. Car runs, but would you still say, is it sentient? No, it's still inert. So from inert, you cannot create something that is sentient. Although Elon Musk is trying to do something where he wants the car to run on its own. If he is able to do that, he will be another creation. So that will be the eighth wonder, ninth wonder of the world. But the idea is that there where there is parts, you can break them apart. You can then destroy it. But by calling the Atma consciousness, the concept of parts is not there. Therefore, there is no destruction of Atma by coming into contact with something else. Okay, so destruction by other contact with something else is not there because Atma is without parts. Heavy enough? Yes, Ashwin. Ashwin, I think we are on mute.
If the parts were to be inert, do you mind repeating that argument again? And I think the follow-up question is there a argument for if they were mixed, consciousness and inert, the parts were somewhere conscious, somewhere inert? Is there an argument there?
Yes, there will be an argument. Here it is not taken up, but there will be an argument that comes about where the Atma, can you say there is a sentient part in the Atma and then there is an insentient part? Can there be like, but that's not an argument here that is taken up. Okay, I'll certainly repeat the idea again. Niramshatvat nacha anyatah. My destruction is not possible by something else because I am niramshatva. I do not have parts. This is the statement made by Lakshmidhar Kavi. Swayam Prakashatiji adds by saying that why should I call myself Niramshatva is because I am of the nature of consciousness. Niramshatva means that which is homogeneous, continuous. And when I see myself as continuous, I think about consciousness. So by referring to Atma as consciousness, there should not be parts. But however, if you say you are so adamant to assume that there is parts in this consciousness, then would you say the parts are sentient or insentient? Because only two possibilities are there. Because consciousness, we say, is sentient. So if its parts are there, either its parts are sentient parts or either its parts are insentient parts. If we say that this consciousness is there with sentient parts, then anything that the sentient part governs, that common governance will be tormented, will be destroyed. So in this body, if there were two consciousness, as we are saying that what I experienced in my childhood was different, what I experience now is different, what I experience at work is different, what I experience at home is different. If I say that these experiences are a different consciousness altogether, then we have not clearly understood the concept of consciousness. Because in all of these situations, I am not tormented at the physical level. The body is still following one decision. So when I make a decision, what happens? I let go of one over the other.
Jirenji, as long as you're talking the parts, the body has two parts too. One is inert part and one is conscious part. So when destruction happens of this body, the inert part destroys, the conscious part doesn't, it continues, isn't it?
Body is all inert. So body
Like living jiva, looks like I'm my body. I have one body which is inert, and then inside the body, living part is the consciousness. So the body could be destroyed by other means, by external forces, internal forces. The consciousness does not get destroyed because it's homogeneous.
That argument again is not part here, because here the concept that is taken out is of Atma.
Okay, not the body.
The I am not the body, that concept will come. Where the shloka will be taken up, we'll say, I am not the body. I am not the mind. I am not the intellect. So that argument is not taken up in this part. So basically what he's saying is Atma, you say, is consciousness, and that consciousness is there with parts, then all that it governs will be torment. We do not find such an experience in this body. So it cannot be consciousness with parts. What if we say consciousness with inert parts? Consciousness with conscious parts, not possible. But consciousness with inert parts, also not possible. Because if you say everything is inert, from inert part, how can you say something consciousness came about? So therefore, that consciousness concept itself will not be valid. To say that consciousness has inert parts, it's actually invalidated because it is all inert. We have never seen something in this creation, in this world, that is inert, and from the inert part, something sentient has come up. So here simply the idea is of the Atma. Atma cannot be destroyed by coming into contact with something else. Obviously, you're correct. The body will be destroyed by coming into contact with something else. But Atma will not. And the point number three. Atma is not taking support of something else. Therefore, if you destroy the support, Atma will be destroyed. That is also not possible. So there when that part, he says, Nacha Ashraya Vinashat. Ashraya Vinashat, when the support, the focus point is destroyed. Me Vinasha, my destruction, Syat, is there. No, not there. Nas. So my destruction is not there when the support is destroyed. Because anashrayat. Because I do not require support. I am independent. So therefore, since I am independent, I don't have destruction. Why? Why would you say that because I do not have support or I do not, I'm independent, that I don't require any support. So if the support is destroyed, I am not destroyed. So he says, why? Because Atma is not like Guna, Jati, Kriya, and etc. So what is this Guna, Jati, Kriya? Is how we define so many things in this world. And based on their definition, if you destroy something, the guna is destroyed. So I'll go through an example to give you guys an idea. And because these things are not there in Atma, destruction of Atma is not possible in this way. So what is the idea? Atma doesn't have a guna. So what is guna? Guna means quality. So let's take an example of redness in a flower. You have a red flower. Okay. So the redness in that flower is the quality of the flower. Okay? That's the guna. So now in order for you to destroy the redness, what do you have to do? What do you need to do to destroy the redness? Where is this redness staying? The redness is staying in the flower. So all you have to do is destroy the flower. Do not give it sunlight. The redness is gone. So what did you have to do? Did you have to take some syringe and remove the redness out of the flower? No. All I had to do was destroy the flower. The guna in it is destroyed. This is how we see so many things. Like in human beings, the guna is the color that we have, skin color, brown, white, black, yellow. These are gunas. You want to destroy the guna, you can do something like Michael Jackson. You can get your pigment transplanted. You have destroyed the guna. This quality is not there enough. That's the thing. Okay, now. Kriya, action. If there is an action that is happening and you don't like the action, what do you need to do? So, for example, a person is, let's just take an example of a child. A child is crying. And crying for no reason. Or crying maybe even for a reason. But you don't like the action. What will you do? How do you take away the action from the person? So in order to take away the action, you just give that child a timeout. So this is it. You make another mistake, you're getting punishment. Or no, go to your room. So what did you do? You destroyed the focus where the action is happening. You didn't have to do anything to the action because you can't act upon that. You can't do anything to that. So where is the action residing? The action is staying in the support, in something sentient. You cannot say the action is residing in inert items. You brought a water bottle with you when you came to sit for the class. You put that on the table. And you know for your, in your mental condition, in your sane mind, you know that you did not move the bottle. But still, you find that the bottle has changed from your right hand side now to your left hand side. Will you assume that the bottle moved on its own? No. What will you assume? The action happened because the support for the action was some being. Something sentient was there that made the action possible. So you destroy the support, the action is destroyed. That is another example. And jati. Species. So jati means humans, animals, birds, etc., etc. So how can you define that this is the jati? How can you say this is a human jati? How can you say this is a bird jati? Based on the body. So if you destroy the body, the jati is destroyed. Therefore, that which is the support for something, when you destroy that support, all the things that are taking recourse to that, that which is supported by it, such as the guna, kriya, jati, etc., that is destroyed. But Atma doesn't have guna. It is qualityless. Atma doesn't have action because Atma doesn't do any action. Atma is not doing any action. I'm scratching my beard. That is not the Atma scratching the beard. It's the body's motion that wants to scratch. So it's not Atma doing. And Atma doesn't have any jati also. Cannot categorize it into one thing. Therefore, it doesn't have a destruction possible because the support is taken away. Because it doesn't require that support. This is one. Another is, as it was previously mentioned, niravayava. Atma doesn't have parts. So because Atma doesn't have parts, it doesn't require support of something else. So for example, there's a pot. Pot is different from the ground. So if you want the pot to stay on a ground, you require the ground as a support for the pot. Without the ground, the pot cannot stay on it. Okay? So you destroy the ground. What happens to the pot? The pot also has to be destroyed. The pot cannot stay hanging in the air. Let's just say that the pot is hanging in the air. Then guess what happens? In order for the pot to hang in the air, it requires some kind of rope to be tied to the ceiling. So again, what is the support for that? Another part that is supporting the pot to exist. Okay. So because something else is supporting it, its existence is possible. For Atma, there is no such support found. Because if there was some support found, then you could say, you could see the dependence of the Atma on something else. We don't find our dependence on something else. And it is very false to say, I am dependent on my spouse. I am dependent on my children. That's a false notion. We're not dependent. We have made our mental way think that we're dependent. Not dependent. So, Atma is completely independent, and therefore, it doesn't require any support. And because it doesn't require any support, you destroy all of those support. You destroy the guna, you destroy the kriya, you destroy the jati, you destroy the ground. It doesn't destroy the atma. So therefore, when it says ashraya vinashat, it is speaking about this kriya, jati, guna, etc. Even when they are destroyed, atma is not destroyed because atma is an ashraya. Without any support. Now, where is Swayam Prakashiti ji getting all of these ideas? Swayam Prakashiti ji, he never shows that these are all his ideas. He then quotes other authors which are speaking about this idea. So first he quotes Sutrakar, that is Vedavyasa. So Sutrakar in Brahma Sutra. So in Brahma Sutra, there is a sutra that says, Charachara Vyapashrayastu Syat Tadvyapadeshe Desho Bhaktaha Tad bhava bhavitattva. So, chara achara, that which is movable and that which is non-movable. Vyapashrayahatu, the movable and unmovable is vyapashraya, the dependence of this is on the body. Is because of the body. So you can say something is moving, something is not moving. That is mainly because of the body. So what does that mean? It's not the primary reason of movement for the Atma. You can only say Atma is moving because it is connected to the body, then you have to say it is moving. So it is a secondary way in which we have to say that the Atma is moving. The primary way is not. So the Bhaktaha is a secondary. You get what the sutra is trying to get at? Basically, the sutra is saying, when can you say that a person is moving? When they are moving, when they're acting. But that movement, will you say, is the movement of the Atma or is the movement of the body? You have to say that is the movement of the body. That is a primary movement. But the body is inert. It cannot move on its own. So its property gets transferred onto Atma, that because of Atma, the body is more. So by association, we say that it is Atma moving, but in reality, Atma is not moving. There is no movement possible in Atma. Okay? And then he quotes Vidyaranya Swamiji in Adhikarana Ratnamala. There is a text written by Vidyaranya Swamiji called Adhikarana Ratnamala, where the same concept is saying that Jivasya Janma Marne, when the Jiva is born and when the Jiva dies, would you say that birth and death is for the body, or would you say the birth and death is for the Atma? If a question is raised like that, and with that, the person then says that when you are born, you do a ritual called Jata Karma. And when you die, you do a ritual called Antyeshti. Is that for the body or is that for the Atma? Who are these rituals meant for? So there, he says that these rituals are primarily for the body, but the body is associated with the Jiva. So secondarily, the Jiva gets the samskara. The association with the body makes the Jiva associated with the samskara, but it is not for the Atma. The samskara is not done for the Atma. Atma is pure from the beginning. So we're not doing the samskara for. So therefore, Atma doesn't die. So only the body dies. So this death of the body does not constitute death of Atma. Therefore, we should not take this understanding to mean that, well, the Atma is supported by the body. So when the body dies, Atma dies. Why can't you say that? This argument should not come. Well, the Atma is supported by the body. Right? We say, when do you experience Atma? I experience Atma when the body is there. So when the body dies, Atma also dies. No, that is a wrong argument, because all these things are secondarily associated because the body is supported by Atma. Atma is not supported by the body. We should not take it the other way. Okay. Let me pause here. If there is any confusion, let me know and I will revise this idea one more time next week.
I had a question about the first argument, Thiriji.
Okay, Haji, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to understand that pratyabhijna. So it's the experience that, you know, which the counter argument by Swayam Prakashyatiji is like to prove that eternality of Atma. But then when we die in my next birth, I don't have that experience of what I was before. So how does this argument prove that eternality of Atma or continuation, you know, that experience ends there?
Very true. And this point is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, where Bhagavan says, Dehi nosmin yatha dehe khumaram yovanam jara dehantar tatha dehantara praptihi dhiras tatra na mukhyati. So Bhagavan says, one who is a dhira does not get deluded, muhyati, does not get deluded by the fact that they don't have this pratyabhijna. So for that, the self-knowledge is so strong that they no longer require this memory to tell them that they are continuous. So see how the shloka goes. Dehi nosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yovanam jara. So how a dehin, one who is residing in the body, is able to see kaumara yovana jara. So for that person, there is no delusion that I go through the body with kaumara yovana jara. Tatha dehantara praptihi. In that same way, after another body is taken up, same thing has to happen. Tatha. That's what tatha is to show there. But what happens is, for dehinaha, for the one who is possessing the body, there is a concept of moha. Delusion will come because they're attached with the body. So they will say, I was born. I don't have recollection of my past birth. So how can I say that I am continuing from that birth? And therefore, Bhagavan says, dhiraha tatra na moha. There, the wise is not deluded because the knowledge of the self is so strong that this erroneous thinking doesn't arise. So what it means is, we realize we'll not have this confusion. why there is no continuity of my past birth. That is how the explanation is provided in Bhagavad Gita. But truly speaking, I don't have a memory of who I was in the past birth. That is different from the continuity that we are speaking. Memory doesn't define the continuity. The experience defines the continuity. There is a lack of memory from past birth to this birth is because certain part of our memory has been shut down, has been triggered off. So therefore, we don't have a memory. If you were able to open that up, you'll have an experience that in my past birth, I was this, I was that. And I guess there is a science like that, where people say that, you know, I can go to a science, and maybe there's hypnosis, and people say in my past birth, I was this and that. So remembrance is not the factor. What is the factor in pratyabhijna is my current experience is telling me that my past remembrance also was there. So I'm matching my past remembrance with my current experience to say that there is a continuity. But that falls at the time of death. And when a new birth starts, it is not there. But when you know that there is a continuity possible, then death is not a matter. That's the idea. So I don't have a definitive answer to say.
Bhagavan also answers that Arjun's question, how come I not remember? Say, you don't remember, but I remember. See, if you did Bhagavan's step, you remember too. And yes. Buddha Bhagavan went through these 40 days of thing, he remembered all his previous births. Yes. So if you could, the stage, Bhagavan says, how could you not remember? Because you don't remember, I remember. So if you remember, you have to go to Bhagavan's state or Buddha Bhagavan's state, then you probably remember all your previous things. That argument, Arjuna asked the same question, how could you be telling that to Surya and everybody? You are just playing with me childhood. I said, because you don't remember, I remember. So the I remember part comes in only you reach the Bhagavan's state. Or Buddha Bhagavan said, Buddha Bhagavan remembered probably when he went to, he remembered all his previous births. That's what he said.
So the word pratyabhijna, it's not the subject, it is the experience that one, the subject has. Is that correct?
Correct. In the present moment, what I am experiencing, that experience matches with my previous experience and I say that previous experience is this experience now. So let's continue our topic on this next week. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harih Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harih Om.
Thank you, Dhiranji. Harih Om.
Thank you, Dhiranji.